Stand by for action.
Gamer's Haven Special Edition.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
I mean, it's a labor of love, just like everything else. So, I'm here to talk about where I see the future of online campaign management and how that's going to help games, you know, going forward in the future. What that aspect of technology will be useful to you in your games going forward. So, do you guys want to introduce yourselves? You want to go ahead, Brad?
Yeah, I'm Brad Salton. I am Level 99 Games. We're based out in New Mexico, and I program applications and design games full time. I work primarily on the iPad, iPhone, and I create tools that help dungeon masters, you know, master dungeons.
Cool. I'm Matt Morton, lead developer, creator of D20 Pro with MindGene LLC. It's a small part-time labor of love, nights and weekends, a lot of them getting where we are now. And do financial software during the day, which really puts me to sleep, so I spend my hobby time programming virtual tabletops. So I'll be talking about virtual tabletops, past, present, and future, and where I think things are going in conjunction with how some of these other people are developing.
And I'm Eddie Webb. I'm the senior transmedia developer at White Wolf Publishing, CCP. And mainly, Mike asked me here to talk about how we're envisioning publishing in the future, because we've been doing a lot of real strong renovation of how we're getting products to people. And so talk a little bit about how that process is working and how we see publishing books go out in the future.
And the format that we're going to go with is each one of us is going to take about 10 minutes to quickly go over the area of expertise that we've got. And we would like you to, we really want questions, but just to make sure that everybody gets a chance to go through their section, please hold all your questions to the end. But definitely hold them, like we want them. We want them at the end, and then there should be plenty of time there at the end for questions. So with that, I'll go ahead and get started. So I'm here to talk about, like I said, campaign management. And is anybody here familiar with Obsidian Portal? Like, okay, good. I was hoping that since we sponsored the panel, you guys would have some idea. I started Obsidian Portal several years ago just with the idea of, hey, let's make it easier to run your games. Like, not to play them online, but there's just so much crap that comes along with trying to run a game, period. You know, a long-running campaign that, you know, let's make this easier. And so here it is, like, 4 years later, and you know, I feel like a lot of the stuff that I wanted to do is still not accomplished. But I do want to, you know, get across some of the ideas that I had and some of the ways that I see it going forward. And I want to make it clear, like, this is not Obsidian Portal specific. It's just what I want to see in the future. And none of these are promises of things that I'm going to do. So these are things that I would be telling myself to do if I had like all the time to do it. So
I hear blah 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 backlog.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is, I'd tell myself, you should do this, and I would respond, yeah, someday. We're working on it. So, one of the things that I really want to see in the future is I want to see more integration and portability of your data. Like, the stuff that you add on Obsidian Portal, I want to see that moving out to, you know, other places. Like we try to make that clear. It's your content, it's not ours. We don't make any kind of claim on it. We don't want to own it at all. If you wrote it, it's yours. We want you to be able to take it on your mobile devices. You know, we want you to be able to, you know, post on your Facebook page, move it over to your blog. We want you to be able to say, Obsidian Portal sucks, I'm out of here, and, like, take all your stuff with you. Like, we don't want you to do that, but we want you to be able to do it. And so we see a lot of really cool tools out there, like things like D20 Pro and, you know, DM Toolkit, and just a lot of these really cool tools, you know, a lot of them kind of small, special purpose, or, you know, like virtual tabletop, and they're small, but, you know, there's a lot of functionality there. We want to see you know, the ability to, you know, do something on a virtual tabletop, you know, maybe you dash a note off about a combat that you just had, and then that just, you know, floats over to Obsidian Portal, you know, without you having to copy and paste or, you know, do the, you know, horrible data entry kind of stuff. So that's one thing that I really want to see more in the future, is just integration and, you know, data portability without, you know, needing, you know, copy, paste, reformat, you know, this lost all the, you know, bullet points and things like that.
Connect everything together like a web.
Yeah,
like a web that goes over the whole world.
Right. Someday. So, you know, and that's just one of the things that I'd really like to see in the future. I would also like to see Obsidian Portal and you know, these campaign management utilities more useful at the table. Like, we don't ever want to be a place that you really play the game, but we do want to make it easier when you're at the table. Like, I'm trying to look something up, you know, I'm trying to look up a character and I can't remember their name. You know, that I want that to be easier, you know, in some fashion, whether it's easier on your mobile device or easier at the laptop, you know, if you can quickly search or something like that. It's still too tough, you know, and it still breaks into the game when you're like, give me a second here, let me go find this. So that's something that, you know, that I'd like to see. And you know, small stuff too, like the ability to, you know, send a quick note, like a secret note or something to one of the players at the table. That's something that I would really like. And, you know, it's just these little kind of things. And it may be that those are better served by, you know, other utilities, you know, things like, you know, iPhone apps or something like that would make it easier. But then again, if those could integrate back with Obsidian Portal, you know, so that you could pass off that note to one of your players and then have that saved back to Obsidian Portal automatically, you know, something like that. So again, it's the integration aspect, but then, you know, I want to see it more useful at the table. So another thing that I would like to see is pre-made content. This is something that I have thought of it since the beginning of Obsidian Portal, and that's one of the first thoughts that I had was, when I'm designing an adventure, you know, sometimes I want, you know, an enemy for the players to fight. You know, I want like a pre-statted enemy, you know, for whatever system that you're in. And I would love to just be able to have some kind of database of content that, you know, and not randomized auto-generated content, because I've never found that to be, you know, it just never fits. Like your random NPC stats, just they're never right. And so if there was just a large database of, you know, characters that people had made, or even like full adventures. Like if you think of like an Obsidian Portal campaign, it would be really awesome if you could say, you know, this campaign is really great. I want a copy of it. You know, I want to, you know, download or, you know, copy or whatever this content, and the GM has, you know, the ability to say, you know, this is mine that I've made, this is the world setting that I've made, please use it. You know, if you could just clone that and have a copy of it yourself to then, you know, have this pre-made content so that you're not necessarily, you know, well, you're not copying and pasting ideas, you're literally stealing the whole thing. You know, but with the you know, the GM's, I mean, at least if you wanted my stuff, like, that's great, I would love for you to have it. And I know there's a lot of people out there that would be very flattered if people were, you know, playing the same kind of content. And so, you know, this sort of pre-made content aspect and the ability to just pull that in, that's something that I would love. I would love it from the smallest grain of like, hey, I would love a character, up to like, you know what I need? I need a tavern. I wonder if somebody's got a pre-made tavern, you know, with the backstory and, you know, what statues are in the corners and things like that, all the way up to like, give me a full adventure. Like, I would really love that. So now I want to jump to some things that have plagued us since the beginning and plagued just online campaign management, and I want to use technology to solve them, and I don't know how. And so I'm hoping that, you know, that there's a lot of ideas that people can bring to me, because these are some things that have plagued me forever. And it comes out of the fact that, like, we have found that it's not so much about world building as it is about, like, project management. You know, you find yourself, you sit down to build a world and build a game, and you end up managing a project. With, you know, I've got to coordinate schedules with my players. You know, I've got to make sure that they're up to date on all the latest information. And it's, you know, it's essentially, you know, did you read that memo about the TPS reports? It's essentially the same thing as, did you read that wiki page I posted about the religions in this world? And so there's all kinds of like project management stuff that goes into, you know, running your campaign. And, you know, so we've slowly over time, Obsidian Portal has morphed a little bit to look more like a project management tool, you know, and less like a world-building tool. And it, I mean, at least for me as a GM, that's been very useful. And I hope it's that way for everyone else. But you still deal with these problems of, you know, project management, and that there's, you know, there's too much information, there's info overload, you know, a lot of data entry issues, you know, you're sitting there typing in all this stuff, it's a real pain in the ass. And so the number one problem that we have, and that I want to use technology to solve, I don't know how, is player participation. We hear over and over from people that are like, that's it, I'm done, I'm not using Obsidian Portal anymore, because I spent so much time on it and my players don't care. And I cannot figure out how to use the technology to solve that problem. How?
Achievements.
We've thought about achievements and we've kind of toyed with it a little bit, but I'm worried that that's too cheap of like a carrot, you know, holding the carrot out in front of them and they're going for the achievement. If it works and it's enough, I'm worried that it's not enough. And so, hold your questions till the end, but we'll take it at the end. But that's the number one problem that we have, and I want to use technology to solve that, you know, and if we could solve that, like, you know, this online campaign management in the future would be so much nicer. It would be so much better if we could close that loop of the GM does so much work, the players don't care. So that's what I want your ideas on how to solve that, because, it happens to me, and it happens to me on both sides. I've been the GM that does too much work, and I've been the player that doesn't care. So that's it for me. That's my 10 minutes. Please, if you have any questions, give them to me at the end. You want to go?
Yeah, and I can get started. I'm a small publisher, publishing my few short RPGs and also a lot of tools for other DMs. I don't want to say too much from the publishing angle later on, but I want to talk a little bit about the future for D&D and all RPGs, really. Because in the future, all your core books are going to be fully integrated with your games, and they're all going to be in one spot. You'll be able to manage your players, you'll be able to manage your community, everything will integrate back to a central device. It will probably be something similar to a wiki type, where you can bookmark pages that you like in the book, you can instantly look up whatever, search. It just makes sense. It's so economic, so environmentally responsible, etc. And the community that Mike is pioneering out, City of Portal, and that is being built up, will all link back so that if I see a world, like I need a game session for today, I want to download a world, I'll just look up all the worlds that people have created that fit into my campaign, download one adventure, send it over to my game, and integrate it in directly with what I'm working on now. The other thing that I focus on a lot in my work is procedural generation, and I guess you're in the other camp, but I'm a lazy GM, and I don't want to plan games, I just want to run them. And so when my party members kick down the door, I'd like to push a button and see what's inside that room so that I can play along with them and just be more of a moderator. And so I do a lot of work with creating magic items, creating treasures, creating eventually whole stories, so I hope. And I think that this is going to be the way RPGs move in the future. At least one subset of RPGs will move towards games that write themselves for you as you play. And you'll be able to say, I want a world, or I want a kingdom, it's a plutocracy, it's got a population of a million, it's one gigantic city with dungeons underneath, and the game will run for it and create everything that you need to run through this and explore it as you play, even though it's a world of your own design with your own touch to it, you can still discover it. So that's kind of what my work pertains to. There are a lot of current problems with the possibility of this, mainly device saturation. Not everybody owns a device, of course, to play games off of. You can use your PC. Everybody pretty much owns a laptop, but it's so cumbersome at the game table who wants to run off one of these. And so really tablets, mobile phones, and the like are going to form the network that connects all gamers eventually. And I talk about procedural generation and making new things. And these won't be a replacement for GMs. They are a tool to help GMs. When I roll an item on my generator, I have to adapt it for the situation at hand. You have to adapt a room to your campaign, etc. But the GM The tools provide inspiration for the GM to run the game as you sit at the table. No planning, no setup. It's all very let's play, which is the kind of RPG experience that I look forward to. What should I talk about next? I'm talking too fast. Yes. A lot of what Mike already talked about is but I want to talk about about the creator's Facebook.
Give your spin on it then. Give your spin on it. Like,
well, I feel that that in the future, players will work on worlds together. The player generated content will eventually usurp the very specific and detailed settings that we see in a lot of the D&D worlds. And the players will sit down, and a GM will sit down in the afternoon, and with tools, with his own imagination, be able to create a world just as detailed as ever on a Greyhawk, in the course of one afternoon, with a full core book of writing, created for them by the devices and tools they have on hand.
You heard it here. It's recorded. In the afternoon, you'll be able to make.
In the future, you will be able to create something as detailed as Eberron in an afternoon.
Yay, the future.
Not yet.
How long?
But later.
That's a good future. Much better than what I'm talking about.
Donald Eberron.
I won't project. That's too much. But
mine is a
it's coming.
Future.
It's here's coming.
A friendly one.
Yes, the future will be RPG fun for everybody. I'm trying to use up time as fast as I can.
If you want, I mean, we can move on, and then just, you know, at the end we can jump to questions. Like,
yeah, I'm more of a question type of person.
Yeah, so. I know, me too. So
all right, well, yeah, let's hear about D20 Pro.
Should be out of the way.
Okay, I'll go next. I'd be happy to. D20 Pro, it's a virtual tabletop. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the kind of the past. I think it's important to understand where things are and where things come from to really anticipate the future. And I got into programming because of computers. I'm a little younger than some gamers, but a lot older than a lot of gamers now. But I got into games, role-playing games, because I saw the old Gold Box, TSR, Pool of Radiance, Curse of the Azure Bonds. Those were what really got me into AD&D. I started playing a lot with my friends, the whole tabletop as well, but always it was in the back of my head. Computers are going to change gaming as we know them. And software takes existing situations and makes them different or easier or better, like a calculator. I often like to equate virtual tabletops, what they mean to the normal game, to like with a typewriter to the word processor. You're still writing a novel, you're still doing something. Just a computer allows you to do things that you couldn't do before, like having a clipboard or a spell checker, for example. So it's very much along those lines. We wanted to faithfully recreate the normal traditional game on the analog tabletop, but do it digitally. So there were a couple core like features that were initially most important to me in terms of my game running as a DM. I'm a lazy DM like a lot of us here at this panel who want tools that do work for us. And maps were important. I didn't like to have to dry erase and clean the maps. It seemed like it really bogged down game time when you switch maps and get ink all over your hands. Hit point tracking, particularly for monsters, when I had 10 orcs pop out surrounding the party, one gets hit by an arrow the first round. There's no way to know when things move around which one got hit, so you had to kind of fudge it. It was still work and be fun, but I was like, I don't want to have to track that. A software should do that for me. Another really important one was initiative. It's like, who's next, who's next, who's next? Like, always bogging down combat, you want to know who goes next. And then kind of effect duration is like the final one. People had haste the entire night and things just like, people, not necessarily cheating, but just being lazy players to their distinct advantage. So those are the four kind of.
I remember one of my characters got resurrected because he had +1 AC from haste and forgot about it. Yeah, we had to step back 3 turns to come back alive.
There you go. So I wanted software to track that. So software does really, really well. It doesn't replace imagination, it doesn't replace human interaction, but it keeps track of numbers really, really well. So I was initially at my job using Microsoft Word, the draw program, putting in images, drawing out my maps on Word and projecting them up on the plasma, and I'd switch it back and forth between it so I could set up the map, and had a little sidebar tool written in Java, which I was developing at the time, to do the hit points, effect duration tracking, etc. Then I had a friend, a coworker, move up to Connecticut. We wanted to keep him in the game group, so I went ahead and integrated the map with some networking. Again, this straight hobby project, the way a lot of these products in general, not only computer software, is based on individual need developing it. So that's kind of how things started, using tools to improve my own personal gaming experience. Then it got to the point where We're like, wow, we could really take this software and share with other people. It's good enough. So we started a small company. My buddy bought two laptops and a projector and kind of started going to conventions and showing the software off. And you can see the first 1.0 version of D20 Pro. It's a pale comparison to what it is now. It's super primitive, but it's come a long way. So now in terms of moving to the present, how we're using virtual tabletops now, we found like really three main group styles. My favorite, I think still probably by far the most popular, is around the table, where you're still going to somebody's house, going to a convention, you're playing around the physical table, so you still have the ability to look each other in the eye, roll dice, do everything. You just want to have tools that augment that, maybe for maps or initiative. Also, fully online is a possibility now because of virtual tabletops, where you can meet people at the con, or you have friends move away, or reconnecting. Maybe you're a military overseas, you don't have the capability to meet people face-to-face. You play online. And then, of course, is the hybrid, where I've moved away from Miami. I'm in Denver now, and I'm still joining my buddies playing D20 Pro. I connect using Skype or voice, and I'm able to stay in on the action. So it really accommodates a number of group styles, not only fully online. Because one danger, I think, of technology is it'll make us less and less connected interpersonally. So I think it's key that technology still allow us to be related to each other. Integration with other adjacent technologies has really been huge. Kind of initially, I thought maybe a pie in the sky of D20 Pro or whatever it would simply do everything. Then I realized as I'm trying to fill the hole of the tabletop, working day and night on that, there's all these other things like character creation, online campaign management, content. It's just way too deep of a hole. So we've had a lot of success partnering with other people in our space, like Hero Lab, for example. We met them and they told us we were going to build a tabletop until we saw you were already doing it. How would you like to work together? And for D20 Pro, character creation was a necessary evil. It's just simply, let's get to combat, slam data in there, and allow it to parse it. But it wasn't going to be, hey, how many skill points do you have per level? There's incredibly complex rules. So partnering with character creation. Also, a service that came up recently, Inferno.net, like a social networking, how to find gamers. People go to our forums, how do we find people to play with? We're like, well, we create the tabletop, we can go to our forums, but it's not, it's kind of a dead end in a way. It's a very small community. So now social networks and other gaming sites, gaming portals, are important to partner with. So we're really looking at our core competency of the tabletop and looking at other people in the industry to partner with to create as big of a possible ecosystem for the gamers at large. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in the future. This is just kind of what we're dealing with right now in 2011. And one thing we definitely wanted to do at all times was faithfully recreate the traditional tabletop experience. If you could no longer play Dungeons & Dragons or your favorite game the same way you played fully analog, then we're failing as a tabletop. We're not World of Warcraft, we're not Neverwinter Nights. Awesome products, fun to play, but they're different. They're not true D&D with a Dungeon Master and players interacting. So we wanted to faithfully recreate that at all times and always give the DM the ability to do house rules and what have you, still play the game that they love. And then we're able to augment things that you can't do as well or at all on the normal tabletop, things like Fog of War and hidden maps. One thing I've had Dungeon Masters using the software tell me is like, I can actually surprise my players now. I reveal a room with monsters, pop up, the players are like, wow, and have to react. Not, okay, let me draw out a bunch of stuff, let me hunt for some minis and put them out there. You can prepare all this ahead of time and show it in one or two clicks of the mouse. And that's been really fun, taking the game we have now and making it better and faster and more exciting. Some challenges I had mentioned, finding players in games and games to play in is a challenge. It's a challenge normally, but it's a bigger challenge when you have a much larger area, but the difficulty finding people. And varied rule sets has been a big challenge. We get a lot of questions about the rule game systems we support. And there's so many games out there, so many different rules. We were playing a lot of 3.5 D&D, D20 Pro, it's in our name, so we do really well with that, but not so well with other game systems. And we want to bridge into that, but it's a big challenge and a lot of work to support these other games. Preparing content is a big challenge. It's a challenge for any DM, but particularly you have a software tool, you have a learning curve, and dumping in content, preparing maps, preparing adventures and stat blocks and all that, it is daunting. It takes a lot of time. I think you end up saving a lot of time with technology, but there's still that challenge of preparing your content and learning a tool to do so. I mentioned learning the software, in particular the Dungeon Master, virtual tabletops like D20 Pro, very easy to pick up from a player, very accessible. I think it dramatically lowers the barrier of entry. Instead of having to sift through a character sheet or find out the dice, you simply do right clicks or look through a computer screen on your mobile app, whatnot. It's very comfortable and you're used to doing that. But for a Dungeon Master, it often requires a much higher learning curve and a lot of tools and expertise at things where you might get frustrated and give it up if it's too hard to do. So making the software easy to use, particularly for the Dungeon Master, is a big challenge. And the necessary hardware. Brad mentioned the device saturation. You're right. Not everyone has a several hundred dollar smartphone or can afford that or wants to lug their laptop or computer to the screen. Or no one has a projector. We have a smart table, a nice prototype smart table at our booth from our friends at Geek Chic and Mesa Mundi. People see that and they love it. And it's like, I can't afford that thing. There's no way. And they get turned off thinking that because the hardware's not there, they won't be able to enjoy it. So there's a lot of ways to get by that, and technology becomes more and more affordable and accessible, but that's certainly a challenge we face in the present, is having the technology, the computer technology hardware to run your thing. So that's a quick summary of kind of, I think, where we're at. The most exciting and the function of this panel is to talk about the future of role-playing on technology. And more features is certainly something to always add. And there are features now and things that are no... There's things we were doing to recreate the faithful tabletop experience, but now we're looking at situations with things like fog of war, dynamic fog of war, line of sight blocking, shadow casting, where you dynamically move around. You can't do that on a normal table. It's really impossible, and totally infeasible at least. But you can do that now, so it's changing gaming. We wanted to make sure we were faithful to gaming, but now we're allowing it ways to change and mutate in exciting ways to do things you couldn't do without the technology, so that's really exciting. And Fog of War is near and dear to a lot of players' hearts. They see it, they want it, they talk about it. And D20 Pro has some catching up to do in that respect, and we're hard at work on that. New devices, particularly natural user interfaces. Mentioned tablets. It was very accessible. Mouse and keyboard has gotten us this far, but it's really pretty primitive. Touch, vision, optical. There's a lot of, NUI, you may hear that acronym a lot more, natural user interface. It's really coming a long way, and that's the way things are going to be. On a tablet, on a smart table, hand gesture recognition like the Microsoft Kinect. I think all those are revolutionizing gaming. I've heard of people using Wii remotes and infrared to do top-down projection and some interesting stuff with control. And we think those things are coming, and I'll just do another super quick plug for our friends at Mesa Mundi and Geek Chic. They're developing some cool stuff, often confused with Microsoft Surface, which is also coming out. So those are a serious barrier to entry. Those are pricey. Everyone, I think, will have a tablet or a smartphone in the next couple of years. Not everyone's going to have one of those, but they are coming. And one other great thing about something like a smart table is a convention or your favorite brick and mortar store could buy them. And then you could go in and no longer sit at home. You'd have a reason to go back to the stores. I think a lot of brick and mortar stores see us as a threat because they think people will just stay home and play online instead of coming into the store. So that's a key way where technology can get people back in the store, get people face to face. Content is a huge, huge thing, and I think that we'll talk about that some more. We're building a marketplace in order to allow publishers and independent artists to put their content directly in D20 Pro format, purchase it, a personalized copy, and plug it right in. So you want to find content, you find it from your favorite publishers and artists, and put it right into the software. That way you don't have to hunt for it yourself. It'll often be at a much higher quality. I know you can, people tell us all the time, I do it myself, get PDFs, rip the images out, use them as maps, but they often get rescaled into PDF and they're difficult to use. So people are willing to pay a fair price for professional grade content, and that's a huge, huge thing. Last year at Gen Con, at the end, I asked my guys at the booth, okay, what feature did someone ask for when we said we didn't have it? They walked away and said we'd buy it later. And it was like, no one was like that. They're like, we want content. So we've really taken that message to heart and are doing whatever we can. As a software company, we're interested in building content. There's people out there that do it far better than us. But we want to be a channel and let our people using the software have access to this content. And lastly, I'd like to mention the virtual gaming ecosystem I had alluded to. We see our place firmly in the tabletop space. We think we could work forever. We're a part-time organization, but we could work improving the tabletop to really what it needs to be. There's all these other aspects out there. There's a social network. How do you find people to game with? There's character and monster generation, random generation, as well as type it in, rule system, things like Hero Lab, PC Gen, etc. Online conventions, I think, are going to be huge. Including sanctioned games. I think there's a huge opportunity for sanctioned games with all the paperwork you have to maintain, a whole audit trail, everything your character's done. Again, databases, computers want to do that for you. So you'll be able to go to an online convention, use your favorite tabletop of choice, download from a character vault online. At the end of the game, the Dungeon Master uploads it back. It keeps track of a full audit history of everything that happened, and it's all there online. You can go to your website. You don't have your computer, but you can still view your character history. All that's coming, and initially I conceived of us doing that, but now more and more I'm thinking that we'll just focus on the tabletop and let someone else work on the cloud aspect of it. But we'll see. But I think there's a lot of room for a lot of companies to be involved to really bring the full, complete solution to players. campaign management I wanted to mention. Obsidian Portal is working on that. I think Lone Wolf has a Realmworks there developing something along those lines as well. That's huge. Campaign management can be very difficult. There's a lot of detail out there, and I think that in addition to plugging in your own content, it'll be key to have pre-made content sucked into your campaign manager, pulled into the tabletop, all seamlessly integrated. That's going to be in this beautiful future we're describing. It's going to require a lot of work to get there, but we see it happening, and it's really exciting. And then lastly, you mentioned gaming surfaces. I think they'll be more and more prevalent. We'll have really cool multi-touch devices to play your games on. We'll be able to walk up, and kind of a complete vision would be, if you walk up to a convention, everything's Wi-Fi, your character's on a character vault, downloaded into the game system, you have your tablet with your character sheet, interactive with the game, so you have your own character sheet on your tablet, but you're able to walk up and move your miniature on a touch surface, playing on content that Dungeon Master maybe pulled down from Paizo Publishing, whoever. To play directly in a game. So all this is going to make gaming easier. Playing faster, playing better, playing anywhere, I think, is where technology is bringing us. So it's fun to be part of it, both as a gamer and also as a technologist.
And from our perspective, it's actually interesting because these guys are looking at ways to make things better, also more approachable in the future. We had a much more immediate problem from perspective of White Wolf, but I think honestly a lot of companies in the past several years have dealt with this, which is that we were just selling less books. We were not getting books into stores, we were not getting books into people's hands. People wanted to buy our books, they weren't available. And part of that reason was because something we've been calling the supplement treadmill, which was that books stopped being a core reference guide that you could acquire, and it became magazines. Here's this month's book and next month's book. And when that book went out of stock, it was never reprinted because it wasn't worth the efforts and the money to reprint them. So these things were very ephemeral. They'd be around for 6, 8, 9 months, and maybe that was a splat book for your class or your race or your clan or whatever. But it's gone. It's gone. You can't get it back again. And so when we moved it to the PDF marketplace, initially it was, how can we get books into people's hands? And for a number of years, that was a good substitute, but we kept running into this problem as people saying, like, I have a laptop, I have a tablet, I have these devices, but I really want a physical book. And I think that one thing that's really grounded in my head talking to the community the past couple of years is that it's really fantastic that we look at these very forward-looking technological tools, but we also need to be able to address a much more classic experience. People want to be able to have big stacks of rule books and physical dice. And so I think some of that is being able to provide these physical artifacts, physical tools on an on-demand basis. I mean, most, I think, people at this point in time are familiar with print on demands. The DriveThruRPG guys have definitely been promoting it. Other companies have talked about it. We're very aggressively going forward with it, putting our older games that have gone out of print into people could buy them again. Vampire the Masquerade, all of our older games are now available again in physical books. But I'm also seeing things like people doing 3D printers to make physical dice. Very custom dice, certain kinds of sides. People making, programming in a model and putting out custom miniatures on demand. Hey, I need 5 more orcs, push a button, bam, 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 5 orcs come out of the printer and you put them on your table. So, part of it, on the one hand, going to a very ephemeral digital thing is a hugely exciting thing, but I also think there's going to be tools to allow us to replicate the classic experience in a much more efficient and on-demand way. So what I really see in the next 5-10 years is people getting contents in a wide variety of ways, however they see fit. A good example of this is that I play in a D&D 4th edition game with some friends of mine at the company, and Dungeon Master uses plastic screen, normal dice, has an edition notebook. I use physical dice, but I have my iPad and my character sheet on. My friend Joe also has a handwritten character sheet and dice. My friend Lori, she has a physical character sheet. She uses her smartphone to roll dice. And we're all playing the exact same game at the exact same time, but we're using the tools that make sense for us at the moment, and they're integrating seamlessly. So certainly having these technological tools are fantastic, but the other point that you guys can mention was content, and that's another big, how do we deliver that content? And again, I think the content can be divorced from the media. I've certainly heard people say, I'd like to buy that book, but it's a hardcover and I can't afford a hardcover. Can it be in softcover? Can it be in black and white? Can I get a PDF? Can I get it on my iPad? Can I get it here? Can I get it here? And so, we've been looking and experimenting ideas of, like, when new products come out, rather than one format and then we try to go back and get these other formats available, eventually be able to launch all at once with, okay, here's a hardcover, full-color book that's luxurious and wonderful, looks great at your coffee table. Here's a softcover, black and white one that you can bring to the table and rough up and mark on if you need to. And then there's a PDF that you can index and search as you need to, and here's a wiki format that you can use to edit so you can put your house rules in and give those to your players, and here's a player snapshot of that rule book so you can give them so they can't read all the mysterious stuff about your world. And all of these things being available simultaneously, you purchase that a la carte, the things that you need for your particular table, and your players can purchase the parts they need, and they get exactly what they need at a moment's notice or relatively quickly afterwards. But there are a lot of problems with this because RPGs, since that's back, publishing in general is collapsing. I mean, I think everyone's been hearing about what happened to Borders, the sales are down, Footspace and Barnes & Noble's going down. So certainly, when we say RPG industry, it's anybody who makes a physical book is being impacted by this. But there's also a lot of migration to other elements, to other ways of getting books. Amazon mentioned that they're selling more digital Kindle books now than more physical books. So people are still reading, people are still doing. But RPGs are technologically much more complex. There's charts, graphs, two-column text, often very graphics. I've been studying things like textbook industry. And they're in a very similar case. They have new books every year. They're very, very complicated. They're very dense visually. They have a lot of information, have to be cross-referenced. And so they're not making the leap to some of the e-readers, but there's been a lot of adaptation to the iPad. There's been ideas that rather than each student purchasing a book, the student pays a percentage fee, and there's a service. And so basically you sign up, you pay $500 a year, you plug in your classes, and it sends you all the files for your class right away. And so the textbook company gets that money every time, but it sends you exactly the files you need, nothing else. It goes to your device and you have access to it, or if you want a physical book to study with, you can spend a few extra bucks to get a physical book sent to you. And so these are things that textbook companies are looking at, and it's absolutely stuff that we can do to get that content to people. But beyond that, if the D20 Pro does something like that, a World of Darkness game, for example, theoretically, we could say, sure, let's go ahead and take our existing thing, rip out the text, put it into the format they have, convert it in, put it back to you guys, and we'll sell it to you for $2, $3, $4 through your software. That microtransaction element absolutely is possible because the content becomes divorced. It's sent to you guys however it needs to send to you, and we just make sure the price point is right for the vehicle in which it gets to you. But there's a lot of moving parts on this. Printing technology is changing. The distribution channels are wildly changing. We just finished up Vampire the Masquerade 20th Anniversary Edition, and we went to the distribution chain and we said, we want to sell this book, and they gave us a certain number, and we said, we're not happy with that number. We sold it directly to fans for a few months, we doubled that number. So how publishing works is different. It doesn't work the same way it did 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago. It's wildly different. So understanding the business model of it, understanding the physical props, how 3D printers work and how to meet them at a price point that gets these devices to people or gets these objects to people, getting the technology to talk about the tablets, computers, and all the smart tables and all that. How do we get, can we get them to a loan option so people can borrow them or use them, rent them out like a kiosk, for their tables? What kinds of elements are in there? We give the content to people, but they have to be able to receive the content, and we have to be able to produce the content in a timely way that makes sense and can get to everyone it needs to get to. So there's a lot of those questions and the challenges that we're trying to answer as a company, and I've seen a lot of other companies trying to answer. I've talked to a lot of my peers over many, 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 many drinks about this kind of thing. And there's no hard and firm answers, but there's a lot of experimentation. It's a really exciting time from that perspective, technology, because there's a lot of fantastic experimentation. Not all of it's going to work, but I'm seeing more successes than failures. I think we're starting to get a sense of how we're going to play in the future. We're not going to all be playing video games. We're going to have a tabletop experience, even if one guy's on Skype, one guy's on an iPad, one guy's rolling dice, and one guy's calling in from Shanghai or whatever. I think that this is a possibility. We can still have that core of that experience, even if we're using these tools to get back to that experience. I'm hearing from you guys, none of your conversations like, we're going to replace this classic experience. I mean, you guys seem very passionate about, you want to accentuate this experience. And so one thing I keep hearing is people are concerned that my Tuesday Night Gaming Group is going to go away. I don't think any of that's true. I think nothing else is going to make it easier because as it gets harder and harder to find time to play with your friends or because you move away or whatever, or you don't have the time to set things up, these tools, these content delivery will make that Tuesday night game even easier to get together and play more often. You can spend more time having fun and less time having to deal with bullshit. So hopefully these kinds of things can come into place, but it's a huge question mark, and a lot of smart people at this table especially have some ideas on where to go, and they're hoping the guy that works. But I think that it will. It's just a matter of getting that balance of the game that everyone remembers playing and has loved for all the time they've been gamers, and bringing these tools in to make that experience better without replacing it. So, a lot to do.
Yeah,
I said a lot of things. Some of it was true.
So that's all of our presentation aspect, and it's good because we've got about 20 some minutes, and this is the best part. So tell us your questions. Address them to any particular panelist or all of us as a whole.
Someone had a question, so don't lie now.
Yeah. So this is your question.
More of a statement. Like you were saying that the city of Portland, you have a hard time with players really caring. One of the tools I use, I just spend their Facebook link up. I kind of spend for them, be like, respond.
Right, and that's, player participation is, I think of that as our Achilles heel. Getting the players to care, I've heard the term spam your players, I've heard that a lot, and it seems to work, and I do it with my own players too.
Annoy them until they respond.
Yeah, it really is. It's I compare it a lot, I think about it a lot of times in my day job. Like I have thus far avoided being a manager in anything, because I see the times that, people that manage me are like, you need to do this. And I'm like, man, just leave me alone. They've got to spam me 100 times to get me to respond to actually do anything. So, I see those parallels there. Like, the players, you just constantly
But alone. I think that these tools can also work in different ways. A good example is I often run a lunchtime game at my office because, we're a bunch of gamer nerds. We game whenever we find 5 spare minutes. And so we, we're at the office. We naturally use Microsoft Office, which we all have, and so we schedule meetings. And so those meetings, but I have my iPhone hooked up to my work calendar, and so my phone's like, oh, I have a game in 15 minutes. And I think that we can move to that kind of thing, to where it automates that. So you're not spamming your players all the time, but your phone's like going, hey, you haven't submitted your downtime yet. What's going on? You haven't submitted your speed log. You can't play until you get this stuff done. I'm seeing a lot of the organized play and live action groups, for example, looking at these kinds of tools to automate as much as possible, so that way it's, a lot of Camarilla fan club, for example, they do Vampire LARP, and one thing they're looking at is the idea of the check-in. So the player goes to the website, they check in, and that sends their character data to the storyteller, and they push a button saying, yes, approve. Mm-hmm. It takes 5 seconds, as opposed to these big long lines that you have to go to a convention to check in and have someone manually look at your character sheet. And so if you don't submit your character, the website sends you an email saying you have 3 days until you submit your character, you can't play, you have 2 days. So there's that spamming out, but I think you can automate a lot of that depending on how you set up your tools.
That's what we're working on. So,
two things about updating the wiki. I recently joined 2 games that play, and they don't use Obsidian Portal. They use another wiki.
It's fun.
But there are 7 players, and all 7 players log in every week. And the GM is able to support this by, he gives out experience based on a journal entry.
Great.
And he also gives out plot points that are developed, not during non-game time. And basically, if you're the idiot who shows up game night and you didn't check the wiki, you're the idiot who showed up and doesn't have the information. And he's been really successful for 3 years now running it like that.
There's a website called Gamesuchek.com. To take a quick question, Gamesuchek.com is actually a video game design website, but if you do a search on there for player participation, there's a lot of fantastic articles about how video game designers are trying to figure out how to get people logged into MMOs to go to their Facebook page to update their Facebook games. A lot of that player retention, stickiness, they call it. And there's one about achievements to talk about exactly that, where it's that if you reward players and you click a button, hey, you click a button, congratulations, you get 5 points. There's a ludicrous extreme to that, and people get bogged down by achievements at a certain point, but there is a certain amount of Skinner box mentality. It does work to a certain extent. So if you reward them for a behavior, they're going to continue to perform that behavior. So absolutely, rewarding your players from logging in will certainly help out a lot.
And it doesn't always work, though. I was offering free XP or free points to build the character if you just submit a background before you did it. I got 1 out of 6 players that actually bothered to do it.
And sometimes it helps. Yeah.
Once they pull away from the pack, you'll start to get more and more.
It's something that we've heard a lot is that's one of the best ways to do it is offer rewards. I guess my point earlier was, we want to figure out a way to do that involve the technology in that to make it easier for the GM to handle that side. Because right now it's all on the GM to say, we're going to offer this, we're going to offer that. And so, yeah, those kind of ways of offering those rewards to your players, and, I've heard of leaving Easter eggs in your wiki, buried deep in there somewhere, that hey, if you find this, read it back to me and I'll give you, 50 more experience points. Those kind of things, I've heard they work great, but we want to figure out a way to, how do we make that easier for the GM to do without needing them to be,
reverse engineering Sherlock Holmes style, you know, search quest or something like that. So.
Well, with player engagement, the trick is that I see Obsidian Portal as a GM-centric tool. It helps the GM a lot, but the player doesn't see any value in their own participation. How does what they do on it make their game better? Because as far as they're concerned, it starts and ends at the table.
It makes your GM not cry at night.
Some players love that.
All you're talking about is how to bring the GM pain of the players not participating to the player, not about how to ease the player's own pain.
That's a good point. And I guess from my perspective, I love to think of the game as a collaborative effort between the players and the GM. And as a player, I love to edit. You know, people oftentimes ask us, like, why can my players edit this stuff? And the answer is, because I, as a player, want to be able to edit that stuff. Like, and I, as a GM, want my players to be able to go on and say, you know what, I'm going to make up this religion. And, like, as a GM, when my players do that, I'm like, oh, my God, that's awesome. Because there's so much less work that I have to do now, because my players are doing it for me. And so, you know, but you're right, that I don't really understand, you know, there's a lot of players that just aren't interested in that at all. You know, this starts and ends at the table. You know, they want to play the game, and then, all right, game's over, I'm going home to, you know, play Xbox. And that's totally cool. I mean, there's still a lot of good players that do that. And so so when they match up with the GMs who are, you know, like, I've created this, you know, this huge world, and they're like, I don't care, I killed some monsters, now it's Xbox time. Like, it's, you know, it's a recipe for tears. It's like, it really is. So, but I don't.
That's what you wish you had all done in one hour.
Right, exactly. Just pre-generated. I think this guy in the white shirt.
One thing that would probably really help is make it a competition for the players to get in themselves. You know, make it visible that, you know, these players have looked at these web pages. You know, they've added this information. You know, what have you done? Like type of thing. You know, make the players fight against themselves for some of that stuff.
And I don't want to monopolize the technology discussion, because I can talk about, how do I get my players, you know, I can talk about that for hours. So if there's any, like you know, technology-specific questions, you know, for the other panelists, in the lecture?
I think Matt might have said something about it, or maybe just tweaked an idea in my mind. But one of the mentions was being able to get content from the publishers and maybe smaller bites so that people can organize it in different ways. I'm wondering, since we have somebody from a publisher up there, is there going beyond, like, PDFs? How have there been anybody been successful in finding other ways to license the content so that people can get it in that custom, here's your packet for the campaign based on we're pulling out these locations, these mechanics,
well,
classes, or whatever.
PDFs, there's two parts of your question. The first part is I haven't seen a successful way of doing that outside of the PDF format yet. But inside the PDF format, I have seen, we've actually done some of this. One example is we did what's called the Collection of Horrors, which were just basically taking different, one monster, one scene, and one prop, and combine them together into these small 7-page PDFs, and it's meant to be very, very quick. I need an idea for a game, boom, go. Another one we did, Comics Conspiracies, which was a group of societies for one of our games, but an individual. And traditionally that would have been like a large 6-page book, and you get all through there, and we just sold them also separate individual files. So that way if you buy just the ones that you want to have access to. So I'm running this group, I just buy just those. I've seen some publishers sell a PDF, the player's guide separately. The Doctor Who game by Drupal 7 does this. You can buy the player's guide PDF separately, so you just the player content out. And the interesting part is, no one wants that. I've done them a lot of different ways, and always people go back to the bundles, they go back to the compilation, they want the complete version, they want everything. Because the one thing I'm thinking about a lot of RPG players is they're also sort of a collector mentality. They want to have everything for it. So even though the idea of parsing things out just what you want is really attractive, I still think we should support that, because there are people who do like that. A lot of us really want to have everything because we're afraid that the one piece we might need at the table might not have got. I may have been that fourth group I didn't buy, and at some of the table's like, oh man, if I bought that file, my game would have been perfect. So
yeah,
I really
don't think PDFs are the answer, because like you said, it's people don't organize information that way. It's really hard to organize PDFs into something that's more meaningful in an in-play experience. You want to be able to find information quickly,
right?
But finding information quickly in a whole bunch of PDFs is really
well,
hard.
I can go back to the question of the PDF devices, and what I see happening, and actually one of the projects I'm working on currently is a platform that will integrate these the core book as a Hypnotix, but also integrate your community, like it's in your portal, to pull in these devices and also to pull in published content that will all seamlessly merge into one core book. So you have a core book, and then if you buy new pages, they just go straight into the places they need to be. And I see that as being what core books are moving towards. As you guys all use the D20 SRD, if we've seen, we see that D&D Insider has done it, maybe not so successfully, but that's what they're going towards, is that everything will be collectivized into one one big network that everyone can draw from as they need to create their personal core book.
But one thing that you said was that there's a learning curve, and I think it's not only a learning curve in using these tools at your table, but also people to understand the power of the tool. A programmer friend once told me that any piece of software takes 18 months to realize the true potential of that software, because people have to use it and try to tune things with it and try to use those features to their best possible capability, and that takes time and effort. And so it's saying, can we have technology? It doesn't also mean it's going to be quickly adapted and used for those purposes. There's going to be a handful of bleeding edge users who are going to jump right in and think it's awesome, but a lot more people are like, that's not a book. I don't, well, how the hell does that work? That scares me, and it's going to take a longer time to get used to this new way of presenting information. But that doesn't mean that we should stop doing it, stop trying to do it, but it does mean that, like you said, you know, PDFs aren't always the easy answer, but even when we do PDFs, it seems like a lot of people aren't even buying that option. So, you know, it's let's get people into buying these bite-sized things and customizing elements, and then from there, then maybe we can look into more efficient ways of customizing and compiling the information.
Yeah, I'd like to quickly jump on that excellent question just really quick about the granularity. The PDF is really meant to be read as a book, where virtual tabletops and tools, things are more bite-sized. So I think it's important to have the ability to have like a full-on campaign, 40 maps, NPC stat blocks, all that as a product, but also you might have a very talented artist who drew up 50 orcs or 20 lizardmen. They want to make a lizardmen pack of simply graphics.
Exactly.
So we'll be offering just graphics like creatures, items, maps, just simply nothing on them, rule set agnostic, in addition to putting in stat blocks.
So that's just closer to micro-attention actions that have been going on in video games, so it's like going, I need five character portraits, so 99 cents, bam, 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 I put those into my particular software and we move forward.
Expanding on that a little bit, if I could, talking about microtransactions. What about kind of a cross between the Amazon Marketplace and SourceForge, some place where if somebody has put together a bunch of really cool graphics, they can make them available, and you could end up almost with an environment or an economy. You know, you put stuff in, you get credit, then if you need stuff, you can pull it out. And just work on interacting that way.
Specialties elements.
Yeah. Well, and I want to address one major problem with this is the integration level. Like if D20 Pro has, you know, a different format that they need their content in than Obsidian Portal does, you know, just if there's 20 different, you know, micro tools that need 20 different formats, then on the publisher side it's like, well, Jesus, I can't take this and, you know, chunk it up 20 different times.
But on the flip side, if D20 Pro says, hey, we have an InDesign plugin that we've developed that you push this, you install this plugin, you push a button, your InDesign file, it comes out in our format, we'll use the hell out of that. So I mean, if the software designers can meet the publishers halfway, if it makes our time much more, much faster, we're much more likely to support those formats.
Remember that.
We have one that's been waiting a while.
And one thing, going back to, you know, learning curve, we at PCGen have learned, if you do not have a good user interface, people get turned off. Like, PCGen is incredibly complex, but it's written from a programmer's standpoint, it's written for programmers, so it's not be user friendly. Like, you know, Hero Lab is great, it works and it's pretty, but, you know, it's...
And UI designers are worth their weight in gold.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can, make sure whatever technology you have in the future has a good user interface. If you have to pay somebody to do that,
do it.
It will be worth it in the long run.
Loser?
Hold on. Two quick questions. One is, have you guys considered any integrations with more of the general Facebook or Google Plus or the I guess, community sites that are starting to come up more prevalently in the internet at large? And there's ways to integrate technology, profile technology, with those general community sites.
Well, typically you'll integrate some sort of standard, and then that standard will, every site that implements that standard will be able to be used. So, like, I think Facebook and Twitter both use open authentication. And once you have that in, it's very easy to do both right off the bat. And any other site anyone else that runs OAuth, then you've already pretty much written all you need to get into their software. And so once as standards develop, and that's more of like the programmers and the there's a couple organizations that manage them. But as those develop too, we'll see a lot more cohesion between the different softwares begin to emerge.
But I think as to your question of like have we considered, you know, integrating more with like Facebook and Twitter? You know, we do have some Facebook and Twitter integration, but it's difficult to find a good match. Like it's almost like you can think of Facebook, you know, it's a square peg round hole kind of thing. Like Facebook is a giant hole that you can put stuff into, but like you've got to find the right fit for it. Like I think it's absolutely a terrible idea to live tweet your game. Like if you do that, I'm not gonna make any judgment. I'm not gonna do that, and I'm not gonna follow anybody that does that. Like. And I think it would be a terrible idea to have Obsidian Portal auto live tweet your game.
I think like there's the reverse though, where the I know some of you've seen the D&D tweets where they tweet you combat updates.
Right.
That you can live integrate into your game. And that's kind of reverse, but it works as a nice way to move to.
Exactly. And so it's about finding the right fit. What belongs on Facebook? What belongs on Twitter? You know, what belongs there in relation to the game that you're playing? And so, and we don't know the answer to that. And I would love if you have ideas on what belongs there. Like, you know, like I said, I've got strong opinions on what doesn't belong there. But if you can tell me what should go there, I would be happy to put that in.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
That's not canon.